Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
Alexandra Silber.
And you play?
Guinevere in Camelot.
Nick Fitzer, I play Lancelot.
Ken Clark, I'm playing King Arthur.
Awesome. And again, like they said, it's Camelot, now at the Shakespeare Theater, now through July 8th. So thanks. It just got extended, so in case you were running out of time, now you have more time. Thanks so much for coming in, all three of you.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to be here.
So it's based on The Once and Future King, which I remember reading, I think, in like 10th grade, and I was blown away by it. I was so into it. We've seen so many versions, Sword in the Stone, we've seen Monty Python, even a little Indiana Jones with the Holy Grail. But remind our listeners, plot summary-wise.
Well, I'll tell you, you can't take the whole Once and Future King and put it in 2.5 hours. They sure tried, and they ended up with 4.5 hours, and that just didn't fly. So is it abbreviated from that book? Sure, a little bit, but at least our production does a great job of taking the ideals, the ideas, the things, the allegorical things that T.H. White wanted to get across and putting them on full display over a 2.5 hour period.
Now, what are some of those allegorical things? Because a lot of folks know the characters and the events that happen, but what are some of the layers there that you're talking about?
So the allegory in the book is largely through Merlin's lessons to Arthur, right? And so in the play, we mostly get to see Arthur try to apply those lessons against a backdrop of the Dark Ages, which is, I think, a very, very good way to highlight those ideals that the play is about, that we hopefully get to see. Well, I hope everybody's getting to see it through the scenes and through the songs. And you see throughout the play Arthur call to Merlin in his times of greatest need. So those seeds that Merlin plants in young Arthur, we see them blossom throughout the musical Camelot.
And what the seeds are, to be specific, is this concept of civility, the concept of might, being used for righteousness, might for right, and also just civil law, the things that we sort of take for granted in a civilized society now, which were not self-evident in the Dark Ages. And overall, the thematic rumbling of a young king, the people in his life that are dedicated to him, trying to make the world a better place, decision by decision by decision. And it's incredibly poignant against our current backdrop.
Absolutely. Now, we want to remind everyone that it started as a Broadway musical. I think it won like 4 Tonys back in 1960. Richard Burton, Julie Andrews, after she did My Fair Lady, but before she did Mary Poppins and Sound of Music in the movie. Okay, right. So in the middle there. Big shoes to fill, Guinevere.
Yeah.
Is that daunting or is that
inspiring?
I mean,
of course it's daunting. No, it is. It's both. It's both daunting as well as motivational. It's galvanizing. You know, I think the really exciting thing is, you know, it's really interesting, and I feel like theater, because it's a musical theater, because it's a younger art form, shares this a little bit more presently than, say, in the ballet or opera world. Like, it's sort of self-evident that there have been hundreds and hundreds of Paminas and, you know, that there's been tons of people that do these iconic opera roles or ballet roles. But because, you know, there are people that are like, I saw Julie Andrews, I saw whoever do these roles. But no, I think that the most important thing ultimately is that I can only speak for myself, that one feels that they're part of a chain of links of people, that I'm the Guinevere that's come along now, and there'll be Guinevere's after me, and that I'm a part of a legacy that began with Julie Andrews, and of course began with the myths, you know, generations and thousands of years before her. But the only clay we have as performers is ourselves. So ultimately I can only take the mold she set and fit the dress to myself, and hopefully be brave enough to bring myself to the role and enhance it in the way that I know how to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're clearly just going to top Julie Andrews.
No, that's not right.
Clearly.
No, separate but different. Separate but different.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well,
yes.
What we mentioned, I mean, it dominated the Tonys in 1960, which is an important year because that was the Kennedys came in. And
exactly.
As we know, JFK and Jackie were huge fans of it, to the point, I think he listened to the songs, you know, the record every night. And then so much to the fact that after he was assassinated that we started calling that whole era Camelot.
Exactly.
I mean, talk about, I want to get the music itself in a second, but just from a sheer pop culture political impact standpoint of how this show, I mean, that's possibly the highest accolade you can get.
Yeah. Totally. It's really interesting. I was at the Portrait Museum the other day and was in the Hall of Presidents, and there was I had a really poignant moment with a baby boomer who was right in front of one of the JFK pencil drawings, and she was very emotional. She was crying quite quietly, and I was just sort of standing with her, and I just was sort of present with her, and she looked over at me and she said, you know, we did our best for you. It's up to you. And we really do have this echo in the musical itself of what we did will be remembered, that, you know, the exact same concept that King Arthur's coming up with of wanting to make the world a better place is exactly what our American founding fathers wanted too, and we're endeavoring to preserve it as well as we can. So there's definitely American mythology that we attach to this Western English mythology.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And when you're saying it reminds us that what you do will be remembered. It's that famous, don't let it be forgot, that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment, there was known a Camelot.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, Lancelot, let's get you in here, buddy, yeah. Old pal.
Sure.
Let's go into the music a little bit. So it's Lerner and Lowe, obviously, yes. The legends. They did Brigadoon and My Fair Lady and Gigi and so many great ones. But remind us of some of the great songs that we hear in the songbook.
Well, it's funny because in the rehearsal process, there was a discussion about not getting my button moment at the end of my first song, C'est Moi. Which, I mean, you know, these songs were made famous by the legendary Robert Goulet.
which I can't. Yeah. Go a little barrel every time.
Right. No. I mean, honestly, yeah. you can't play this role without at least hearkening to.
It's the links
yes.
I was talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. I mean, I am endeavoring to make him a very different Lancelot than Bob Goulet or Franco Nero's renditions of this character, yeah. But. But
this is the Nikki Fitz version.
Yes.
Yeah.
But arguably, Camelot, the title song, and If Ever I Would Leave You are, you know, two of the most famous songs in the musical theater repertoire. And I was sort of willing to give up my applause at the end of C'est Moi because I knew that, you know, even if I sort of dragged myself on stage and didn't do a tremendous job of If Ever I Would Leave You, it's such a good song mm-hmm. yeah. that people are still going to love it. You know, my dog could sing If Ever I Would Leave You and people would still probably applaud at yeah. the end of it.
I kind of want to hear that. Can we do the barking dog version?
Ken and my yeah. cat can do it.
but it is. It's such a good song, and I have had the good fortune to sing it. But one thing that actually in the process, Robert Goulet's voice is lower than mine. He's an actual true bass baritone, mm-hmm. which I am not. I'm more of a baritenor. And in the Lerner, the creative team went to the Library of Congress to look at the Lerner and Lowe papers. And they were searching through the notes in the margins, and one of the things that they found was a note that said, "God, I wish Bob Goulet could sing this in C, but he can't."
Oh,
so
yeah.
it's in so his key was B flat, but James, our music director, said, "Well, I mean, how about you do it up a step?" And I said, "I would love that. Yeah. That would be much easier
so
for me."
you're fulfilling yes. What the original yeah. intent was. I guess.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Take that, Goulet.
Right. Yeah. God
We've
bless
had
him.
A lot of that with this music, actually. A lot of tailoring it to our bodies and voices, and and I think the real virtue of this particular production is not. I mean, I think you guys would agree. Is not only that the ideals are one leg of this production. And the other is that it's told really elegantly and thoroughly through the density of the relationships, mm-hmm. particularly between the three of us. Yeah. And it wouldn't, you know, ideals are one thing and concepts are one thing, but if they're not played out in mm-hmm. intimacy between people, mm-hmm. it doesn't resonate as deeply. And I think it's been an amazing sort of alchemy here. It doesn't always happen. So it's really special and a yeah. really amazing thing to sort of see take place.
Yeah. Awesome. Speaking of seeing it take place, what do we see visually wise? Someone, King Arthur, get back in here.
All
what
right,
do we
man.
See costume wise?
Oh, baby, baby, do we got some costumes for you. Look, so first of all, we'll get to the costumes in a second because they're spectacular. But one of the reasons that the costumes stand out so well is because there's this great synergy between the set design and the costumery. Mm-hmm. The set design is...
Costumery.
Costumery, yeah. So the set is very... medieval. It's very plain. It is very
sparse,
very Spartan. It's very it's a wooden set, very simple backdrop for the costumes to really, really pop on.
So
them.
That makes them pop.
Yes.
Are we talking like the chainmail?
Oh, you betcha. The whole deal, man.
I will say actually The set, even though it is Spartan, it is very grand in a way.
Oh yeah,
it's very tall.
One of the things that this Shakespeare Theater Beautiful. Company has is yeah. the verticality of the space
right.
really really adds something to the.
And it's also based hugely, the design is based hugely, as is the piece and the world in the natural world. Like mm-hmm. it's a, you know, it's the very, you know, this takes place at the very onset of Christianity, you know, a community mm-hmm. still heavily based in pagan culture right. connected to nature. And I feel like the set really reflects yeah. that.
Yeah. Yes.
And of course, If Ever I Would Leave You is about the seasons. Mm-hmm. There's
when,
a lot of.
Yeah. When I'm walking on during, what is your song just after the joust? I can't.
Before I Gaze at You.
Before again. I Gaze at You Again. As I'm walking on for during Before I Gaze at You Again, mm-hmm. There's almost the feeling of being in a cathedral
yeah.
because it is so vaulted mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. elevated and like just walking between these huge pillars in the set.
Right.
You know, and you know, Lancelot has just brought a man back from the dead, so he's thinking about God a lot, and mm-hmm. he's thinking about the fact that he's sort of lost his God and gained a new one in the form of Guinevere, mm-hmm.
But you have a very seasonal visual landscape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the costumes, Ken?
Right.
Oh my God! What do you not say about the costumes? The costumes are incredible. Anna Kuzmanek, who designed this show or the costumes, I mean, every single costume is unbelievable.
Work
I have
of
a
art.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's the armor, the detail on the armor, whether it's we have this knighting scene where we're in full gold. What is the word? What do you use?
Regalia.
Regalia, yes, of course.
Al is wearing the heaviest costume in the Shakespeare Theater's repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Golly.
85 pounds.
It weighs more than half my body.
Golly.
But it's worth it.
Yes.
It's worth it. And Ken's seen me run in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty quick change for both of us. But no, I think the other thing that I love about what Anna has done is she tells such a beautiful visual story through the clothing. Through our aging process, mm. through our moral mm-hmm. issues. There's a scene where, you know, Arthur and I have a very similar color palette throughout mm-hmm. the show. We're connected through color, but it darkens and it intensifies as the show goes on, and we're more and more imprisoned. You know, you see, my collars mm-hmm. get higher.
I love when even the costume
yes,
is similar.
They're telling stories. And I think the other thing that Anna does beautifully that is not always the case with costumers is she's executed a vision, but oftentimes an actor can often feel that they are definitely wearing a costume. And I can only speak for myself, but I feel like I'm not wearing a costume. I'm wearing Jenny's clothing, which mm-hmm. is very, very different. Mm-hmm. This is clothing she would have selected, she would wear, reflects her condition. And that's it's a really extraordinary thing yeah. to
especially
to
when the costumes
called her Jenny.
Yeah, is that
your nickname?
Yeah.
Hey, Guinevere. Hey, that's Jenny from the
Jenny. It's funny. I guess Jenny was a big name in the 60s, too, because of Love Story, the movie Love Story,
course.
As well. As
well,
well
that was
as
actually 70, 1970.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
but there, you know, that's why there's a lot of Jennies in that generation, yeah. I guess. Anyway.
Love means never having to say you're Jenny. So I will. Oh, in addition to the costumes, we have some of the most iconic props, too. I mean, we have Excalibur. Mm-hmm. We have the Holy. Do we get the Holy mm-hmm. Grail?
No
Grail.
So we don't cover the whole. Okay.
Well,
what's Excalibur? What's the sword look like?
The Excalibur, well, there's a big fight scene, and we don't use Excalibur for that because
he's special.
Wouldn't even be fair.
It is also enormous.
It's compared to
they're like nesting teacup dolls. Like,
yeah,
like Excalibur is what four?
It's about
and a
four
half feet,
feet, and it's top heavy, and it is a true two-hander, man. It is this great big shiny sword.
You handle it like a boss.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Well,
he swings it at my face.
I do.
Every single night.
That takes some trust.
It actually does, though. Yes.
He hasn't flinched one time.
Not once. And I have
there's
to say that
there's still time. You will flinch.
He stops. It does reveal how vulnerable the knighting ceremony is, like how bizarre it is that you're just kneeling before somebody with your exposed neck with a sword and they're holding a sword.
Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre. Right.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
You know?
Yeah.
Totally.
Well,
they used to knight with guillotines too.
He could trip on his enormous costume.
Boy, oh boy. Costumes are big and beautiful, but I also have a literally 10 yards of velvet cape.
Yes, we love him.
That, let me tell you what, I learned how to move in a cape for this show because I was tripping and falling and stumbling all over the place.
Totally.
But Anna gave me permission. She said, you have to use the cape.
Yeah.
You can't pretend it's not there.
Right.
So, you know, It's just adapting to stuff like that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Totally. Well, it's gonna be. It sounds like a visual feast. We know it's gonna be an audio feast because I think the OBC was like the top selling album in America for like 60 years.
That is like hugely responsible for the popularity throughout
the
years.
I think so too.
And of course the movie too with Richard Harris.
But I think most people. I think most people came to the album first.
Right. Yeah.
They
I think so.
Experienced the album and then the and then they had an opportunity to see the movie because most people most people weren't able to make it to New York to see the Broadway production
or the tour or
so when they my mother for instance discovered this album and it's the character of Guinevere spoke to her so personally,
same to my mom,
and so she had when the movie finally came out she had the opportunity to experience the story in a much more personal way. But yeah, I think the album is what got a lot of people.
I think you're right. All right, I'm gonna make you guys give me one of these. You can't say everything. Favorite moment in the show.
I love the scene where Guinevere and Arthur conceive of the table. When they work their way through, they at the top of the scene, we're at a brick wall, and it's like it's pretty early in the show. And once that scene comes around, the train is well and truly on the tracks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, once we get that thing going, and that scene cooks every night, if I can toot our horns here for a second, man, that scene is going.
We play good tennis, Ken and I.
We do. We do. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's a lot of fun every night.
And it's always
King Arthur Ashe.
Yeah.
Best tennis reference.
I love it.
Took me a minute to realize what you said.
How about, you?
Interestingly, it's the complete other side. I do love that moment, but it's the complete other side. The sort of the end of their marriage is my favorite moment, is the What Do the Simple Folk Do scene. Yeah. Mm. And I just love it because it's a very complicated moment, and the density of sort of loving somebody but realizing you're not married to them anymore, and the joy in the face of such sorrow. It's very dense. It's a very misunderstood song that I think
that's a huge point there.
We've done something really unusual to it, and also like never really talked about it, which is sort of special.
Well, we were on the same page for that song
from the get-go. Yeah. And actually Ken and I really wrestled to have it be what it is. Mm-hmm. Like we were really like, no, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I love it, and it does feel like the closing of a circle for our story
it
in
does.
A funny way.
Yeah.
So I really love that moment. I look forward to it every night.
Awesome. And Lancelot, how about you? Is there a moment that we're all just gonna be blown away that's your favorite?
I have to be honest, it's not a moment that involves any of the three of us.
maybe that's why.
Yeah, maybe. My favorite moment in the show is when Nimue appears and calls Merlin away. And honestly, Ted Van Griethuysen is such a brilliant, brilliant actor.
Real life Merlin.
So honest in the delivery of his final line where he just says, I must wish you well in ignorance like everyone else. Mm-hmm. Reign long and reign happily. And, oh, God, it
the
just...
The last line. Dude, you gotta say it now.
Say it.
When he says, remember...
To think. Oh, God, yeah.
It's like the whole play. Remember, we talked about like the seeds that Merlin plants in Arthur?
Yes.
That is the last moment of, this is what I've given you. Let's see what you can do with it.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. The dream of every good parent.
Yeah.
And I also just insinuate that Melissa Wimbush, who sings Nimue, is one of the most glorious voices you could ever dream of. And I have, if I may, it's really what you hope death is. Like you go, I hope when I die,
Nymph calls me on to the great beyond with this gorgeous tone and luscious.
And warmth and beauty. And exactly. So it's a, in every corner of this production, there's a lot of specialness to be seen and heard.
Aww, so come find out how to die.
In
closing, why? I always like just ending on. It's a very simple question, but if our listeners have heard this, why should they come out? There's so many options around town to come see things, but why get their butts at Camelot at Shakespeare Theater?
Oh man, look.
Look.
Whether you have or have not seen Camelot, we got something for you. Mm-hmm. Honest to God, if you are familiar with Camelot, there is something in this production that is on full glorious display that has not been really highlighted in any other production of Camelot. Mm-hmm. I promise you, if you think you know this play, if you love this play, if you fell in love with the music, you'll see something new. You will notice something new. It will speak to you in a different way if you come see what Alan Paul has put on that stage.
Yeah.
I promise you.
Yeah, we've trimmed the fat, yeah. Really. You know, I mean, this musical in its original form, 4.5 hours, has a lot to offer, but there is a lot of sort of, frankly, schlock in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot there that, you know, in their attempt to tell all of this story,
right.
They really did.
Yeah.
And it's just... It doesn't all work.
Okay. So what's it cut to?
So we cut to two and a half hours.
Okay.
Bouillon cube.
Yes.
Of
yeah. Yes. No. Yes.
with one intermission, I assume.
Yeah. With one 15-minute intermission, and so I really think that we present a lean, mean fighting machine of a show that is distilled down to
its
most perfect form.
I can offer a macro answer to your question, which is, you know, right now we also have Hamilton at the Kennedy Center.
I just saw it last Thursday.
Oh, amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, sure, you know, sure. I think...
I'll say this
in the macro answer under the American mythology umbrella. They're good counterparts in the sense that, you know, you see what our founding fathers endeavored to create and establish, and our play is a metaphor for what we hope to be remembered for and continue, and an endeavor to continue despite all odds. And I think this is a play of great hope and a play of great character. And I think it's just one of those things that does restore faith in that possibility.
Mm-hmm. And you have the Kennedy connection, Kennedy Center, and then Kennedy's favorite
precisely.
Play.
You can't watch this musical without drawing the connections to modern day.
Mm-hmm.
Through. I mean, we've done that on purpose, and just that's the way the musical was built.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you all coming in and doing a little round table with us. Nice the round table
pun
here.
Intended. Pun
very much intended. I've been waiting for the whole thing to say. But no matter how many interviews you guys go do or me after this, we'll all look back and remember that one time there was a Camelot.
Yes.
WTOP.
Shining moment.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Again,